So stock trading is easy to understand conceptually because it's one-dimensional. Either the stock goes up or it goes down. Clear and simple, at least from a trading and profit loss perspective. Options trading, however, is multidimensional. Price, time, and volatility all impact the value and price of an options contract. On today's show, we're selectively choosing to highlight the impact of volatility on options because, as we've seen in the 2020 market collapse, if you're not managing volatility, it could become your worst nightmare.
You're listening to the Option Alpha podcast from OptionAlpha.com, where we show you how to make smarter trades, learn how the stock market really works, and generate consistent monthly income. Now, your host and head trader at OptionAlpha.com, Kirk Duplessis.
Hey everyone, this is Kirk here again from OptionAlpha.com, working every single week to make this the most popular investing podcast offered online because it's based on one thing and one thing only, and that's helping you guys consistently place smarter, more profitable trades. So again, thank you so much for tuning in today. On today's show, we're going to be going through the impact of volatility on options, and this is actually kind of the sister episode to show number 135, where we dove deep into how you figure out this implied volatility number, how it's calculated, where it's derived from. We'll cover a little bit more of that on surface level today on the show, but these two shows are meant to go together. Show 135, if you want to pause and even go listen to it again, is meant to dive deep into what implied volatility is specifically. Now, today on show 175, we're going to talk about the impact of volatility on options, different contracts, spreads, time, all of these things that could really, really help you out. Now, as you know, 2020 saw the biggest volatility expansion in more than a decade, and it rocked a lot of people. Plus, it's going to happen again. So if you haven't listened to our interview with Richard Hudson just a couple episodes back, you probably want to pause and go listen to that because it's one of our most downloaded podcasts so far for not only 2020, but also actually so far for 2019. So very popular episode. And in there, we talked about this idea of expanding volatility, and we now know that that not only can and will happen, but it will happen again in the future. So if you think that we're out of the woods with volatility expansion, you've got another thing coming. And so today's episode is really geared around how you can understand this leverage that volatility has on different option pricing. So as I dive deeper into this, as always, you can head on over to the show notes page at optionalpha.com/show175. We'll have everything listed out here, some additional links and resources that we find really helpful or think that will be helpful for you. And you can obviously hit us up there if you have any questions afterwards. So first off, we want to do a quick refresher on how options are priced. And this is meant to be very high level, but I think it kind of sets the stage for our discussion today. So option contracts are priced based on two high level categories. And the two categories are intrinsic value and extrinsic value. Personally, I think of these as intrinsic value, meaning the value that it has internally or embedded in the contract right now. And extrinsic value is all of the external factors that are not necessarily priced into any immediate value in the contract. So intrinsic value is the value that the contract has if it were to be exercised and converted from an option position to a stock position. So with call options, they have intrinsic value if the strike price is below where the stock is trading. Put options have intrinsic value if the strike price is above where the stock is trading. And that means that if we were to convert these call options or put options into the underlying stock security, there would be value embedded in that option contract immediately. And these are opposed to option contracts that are out of the money. Those out of the money contracts have no intrinsic value. There's no value if you were to convert them over from an option contract to a stock position. So that's the first side. And that's actually really easy to calculate. You just see where the strike price is, you see where the stock price is, you make some simple arithmetic, and you're done. The other part of an option contract that's priced is the extrinsic value. And this is where we get into the multidimensional aspect of trading. This is where it becomes a little bit more difficult for people who are newer to trading to understand why an option contract maybe doesn't or does go down in price or up in price on a given day when maybe the stock doesn't move as much as they would have thought to cause a price change or to not cause a price change. And so extrinsic value basically encompasses things like time until expiration, implied volatility, and interest rates. And we don't really talk about interest rates a lot. They don't have a major impact on pricing right now. In the future, they probably will have a bigger impact as they start changing more. But right now, there's not a big impact on pricing, especially if you're trading shorter duration contracts. It's not a big impact around interest rates, but it is included in there. And so the main two ones that we focus on is time until expiration and implied volatility. Those are the external factors that influence all option pricing, whether there's intrinsic value or not. So this is why you see option contracts that are out of the money, that don't have any intrinsic value, actually trade for high dollar amounts, because there's extrinsic value. There's time until expiration, or there's really high implied volatility. But remember, as you get closer to expiration, all of the extrinsic value goes away until at expiration, you're left just with the intrinsic value of the contract. So keep that in mind as we go through this episode, because that's a really important point as we start to understand how implied volatility reacts and how volatility impacts an options price as we go through different changes in volatility, and also as we change up the time until expiration. All right, so now that we understand the two things that impact an options price, generally speaking, these two broad categories of intrinsic and extrinsic value, let's answer the question first: what is volatility? What are we talking about when we say that volatility impacts option pricing? To me, volatility is nothing more than movement in the market. And when I say market, I'm talking about whether it's the S&P or an individual stock that you're trading, an individual security, whatever it is that you're trading, we're talking about movement. And so high volatility means lots of movement, and low volatility means not a lot of movement. That doesn't mean no movement, it just means not a lot of movement. Now notice I haven't said movement in what direction so far. So I didn't say that there's a lot of movement and it always is the stock going higher. I didn't say that there's a lot of movement and it's always that the stock goes lower. Volatility is non-directional. It can be movement in either direction. And this is a really important concept to understand, because this really kind of sets the foundation for why changes in implied volatility have a broad impact on a lot of different option contracts. And that's because when we think that there's going to be more volatility in the market or less volatility in the market, we don't know which direction that's going to ultimately end up taking the security. All right, so we're going to table this there, and that makes sense. Volatility is just movement. We'll come back around and circle back around to the impact on option pricing here in a minute. But for the time being, we have to actually switch and talk about something else. And that is that there's really two classifications, and I would call them classifications, of volatility. There's expected volatility, and then there's realized volatility. And this, I think, is such an important point. I really want to spend a little bit of time here just again going through this, even though we talk about this all the time on podcast shows, courses, etc. There's volatility, and we understand that's movement, but there's two classifications of volatility: expected volatility and then realized. And expected volatility is what people expect to happen in the future. It is what it sounds like. People expect, or they assume, basically you could just use the word assume in place of expect, they assume that volatility is going to be 10% moving forward, that the stock is going to move up or down by 10%. Or they assume or expect that volatility is going to be 20% moving forward, that the stock will move up or down by 20%. And that's all it is. And I don't think that people understand that it's truly just a guess. It's an expectation from the market and the market participants, people like me and you who actively buy and trade and sell option contracts. It's our expectation based on our activity as to how far and how fast we think a stock might move. But it's just an expectation. The other classification for volatility is realized. And this is what actually happens. This is when you go back 30 days and you say, okay, the market assumed or expected the stock to make a 10% move. What actually happened over the last 30 days or the last 60, 90 days or year? Did the stock move 10% or did it move 8%? Did the stock move 12%? More than people expected. And so this differential between the market's expectation for movement and the actual realization of that movement occurring is where we get what's called the implied volatility premium, or the risk premium that's embedded in option contracts. Broadly speaking, we see all the time across a lot of different sectors and industries that market participants, the market, people expect a stock or an underlying or security to move way more than it actually does long term. And this generally means that people are overly optimistic or overly pessimistic. And that's really all it is. Now, this doesn't mean that it always is the case. I think a lot of people assume that when they get into option selling, they assume, oh my gosh, Kirk, you said it's always, no, it's not always the case. There are times when the market moves more than expected, like it did in March and April of 2020, right? The market moved way more than expected. And that's why you have to properly risk manage your portfolio, small position sizes, all that stuff. But the broad long-term trends are and will always be that markets move less than expected. Okay, so we covered that side. Now let's go over to the next one. What does the VIX have to do with all this? Because when I start talking about volatility and I start talking about markets and we start talking about spikes in volatility or managing volatility, one of the things that comes up all the time is the VIX. And the VIX is just a measure of volatility for one particular security, and that is SPX. That's it. The VIX is just the measurement. It's the embodiment of volatility graphically for the SPX or the S&P 500. And that's all it is. It's a 30-day representation of what volatility should be on the S&P or what people expect it to be. Now, a lot of people use the VIX as a broad gauge of volatility and fear, and that's fine. But you do have to understand that volatility on the VIX and on the S&P is not the same as volatility on an individual security. And you know, this is an important point because I feel like a lot of times when people are looking at volatility, they might only be looking at the VIX. And while the VIX is definitely a great judge of overall market volatility, it is by no means the end all for every security. We could go through a market environment where the VIX has a huge spike, but then individual securities have very little to no change in volatility. I would say at the same time, you could even have companies that have larger changes or industries as a broad category that have larger changes in volatility well above what the VIX in a particular instance is reading. So in this market environment right now, that could be things like airlines and cruise ships. They've all been rocked by this 2020 coronavirus and pandemic. And so their individual company or industry volatility metrics are way higher than something else in a more stable category or industry. So the one thing you have to understand about volatility as we keep going forward is that, yes, you will start to see volatility impact the broad market as a whole. So we saw this in 2020 when stocks went down, generally everything's going down, but that doesn't mean that volatility is all the same across all these different industries, companies, and ticker symbols that you watch. So you really have to focus on the broad market, just keeping an eye on that, but then also what is your individual security that you're going to be trading? What is the impact on volatility and where's the volatility reading for that individual company or security? All right, now we get into the question of why does volatility change? So we've talked about volatility going up and down. Now the most logical question is, why do we get changes in volatility? And the simple answer is market forces. Market forces and expectations change day to day. And as the market, me and you included, because we're part of the market, as the market participants get more or less information, or things become more or less clear, or the outlook in the economy becomes better or worse, or an individual company's outlook is better or worse, then that causes a change in volatility. Market forces are the only driving impact of changes in volatility. People either expect things to be more volatile in the future and securities to have a wider range of trading, or they expect securities to be less volatile in the future and a more narrow and compressed range. This is a great example of it, just what we're living through right now in the 2020 collapse, where markets were just zooming higher, little bit of movement every single day at the start of 2020. And all this pandemic stuff started to happen. And what was clear about the pandemic was that we didn't know how far and how fast it would go and how bad it would be and how much of an impact it would have on the economy and businesses and people. And that uncertainty, that market force of uncertainty, caused a dramatic rise in volatility and a lot of downward pressure on securities and stocks. That's all it was. But here's the thing, right? And this is why it's so crazy about volatility. We have yet to actually see the numbers from a lot of companies that they're actually doing bad, right? And so most people look at it, they're like, well, we don't know if the companies are going to do bad. And I assume that a lot of them will have really bad quarters if they haven't already. But we don't know what the exact numbers are going to be, yet volatility increased because of the expectation that things are going to start to dramatically become worse. And so as we get better information and as we start to see the pandemic either flatten hopefully soon or start to go the opposite direction and we start to see cases go down, then we're going to start to see volatility really contract, because now things become more clear. You know, one of the interesting things that I always found about volatility, not only just trading now, but even when I was a REIT analyst, was that markets want to know certainty. And when markets are certain or mostly certain about an outcome, then there's low volatility. And that's because things can be properly priced. They know exactly what happens. They know exactly when it happens, what the outcome is going to be, what the impact is going to be. Markets are certain. But when you go into an uncertain environment, then you start to see a rise in volatility or expected volatility because we don't know what's going to happen. And this pandemic was a great example of this. We don't know how far, how fast it's going to go. Earnings trades are a great example of this. We covered this in the last episode on show number 174, that there's this rise in implied volatility heading into an earnings event. And right after the earnings event, whether the stock has good news, bad news, amazing guidance, bad guidance, we generally see a decline in volatility. And that's so counterintuitive to what many people think, because many people think, well, if the stock has really, let's say a company announces earnings and it's really bad and they give bad guidance, the stock goes down by 10%, but yet implied volatility goes down as well. Well, that doesn't make sense. But if you really think about it, it does make sense because now we've gone from an unknown state, we don't know what their earnings are going to be, to a known state of information, which is, okay, we know exactly what their earnings are going to be and we know what their new guidance is. So now we can readjust the price and go from here. We don't expect any new surprises or gotchas, you know, to come out of it. So this difference between known and unknown information, I think, is really what causes some of the major changes in volatility. And when you go from a known state to an unknown state very fast, like we did in the 2020 collapse, that's what causes such dramatic changes in volatility over a short period of time. All right, so now let's change gears here and actually start digging a little bit deeper into how volatility impacts an options price. So we've talked a lot of high level, and I think it's, again, important to set the stage here with market forces and the VIX and what is volatility, single stock versus VIX, et cetera. But now let's start really kind of digging in here and talking about how volatility impacts an options price. Now, the first part of this discussion has to be a little bit high level because we need to talk about the broad impact on an option price. And the broad impact that volatility has on an options price is simply that when implied volatility or expected volatility goes up, then all option prices go up as well. And that means call options, put options on both sides, because again, volatility is non-directional, could go up or it could go down, the underlying security. And so with rises in volatility, we see option prices rise. And with declines in implied or expected volatility, we see option prices fall. Now, this means that option prices can rise and they can fall even if the underlying security or the stock doesn't go anywhere. And this is a really hard concept to understand because a lot of people will see a decline in volatility and the stock didn't move and they'll wonder why their option contract lost money. Or a stock won't move and we'll see a huge spike in volatility and the option contract will just balloon in value even though the stock didn't go anywhere. So again, this is a really important point here that implied volatility has a dramatic impact on an options price just based on the expectation and the changes in expectation moving forward. That's again, totally separate from the intrinsic part of the option contract's value, which is derived from the difference between the strike and where the stock is trading at the time. So now that we know kind of the broad strokes of the impact of implied volatility on option pricing, how can we measure this? How can we put some numbers around this quantity? And one of the ways that we can do that is with one of the Greeks, which is vega. Now, vega is the measurement of the impact that changes, and this is the important point here, that changes in implied volatility have on the option price, or basically the expectation. It doesn't exactly say how it will happen. It's not extremely precise in saying, if implied volatility goes to this, then this will always 100% make this exact change. But it's pretty accurate, right? That it's going to guess how much the change in implied volatility will have an impact on the underlying contract's price. So vega measures this impact of changes in implied volatility, and specifically, it's expressed as changes in the option contract for every 1% change in implied volatility. So vega, to me, always stood like V for volatility. That's how I remembered it. And that's why theta always stands for T for time for me. That's how I remember it. But vega is a 1% change in volatility and what that impact on the option contract could be. Now, as we're going to see here in just a second, because I want to go through an example, one thing you have to understand about vega values is that when option prices change, they change differently based on how far you are from expiration. So remember, volatility is just one part of this extrinsic value component of an option contract. So changes in volatility will obviously have an impact on all option prices. But now we have to start digging down deeper and say, okay, how is implied volatility changing for contracts that are 30 days from expiration versus 120 days from expiration? Because being 30 days away from expiration is dramatically different circumstances than 120 days from expiration. So remember that vega values for option prices tend to be higher for further out contracts in time. And so I want to show that as we kind of go through an example. And again, you can just check out all this stuff on the show notes page. We've got also a ton of videos and training on vegas and Greeks that also will help out. But right now I'm looking at SPY, our good old friend SPY, which is the ETF for the S&P 500. And I'm looking at the April contracts that at the time of this recording are about 15 days from expiration. And the 250 call options for April, which is effectively right at the money at the time that we're doing this recording, are trading for about $10.35 or so. Now, when I go in to look at the vega value of those 250 call options, again, that only have 15 days to go until expiration, the vega value is 21. So what this means is that if volatility were to change by 1% for the S&P, then we should expect that the option contract, the call option at 250, changes by about $21. So if volatility goes up by 2%, then we would expect that this option contract would go up by about $42. So remember, the 21, the vega value, only represents a 1% change in implied volatility. Now, if I go out to the May contracts, which are about 43 days to go until expiration, then the vega value for the 250 calls is 34. Now, this is interesting because as you go out further in time, little slight tweaks in implied volatility, a 1% change, has a much greater impact when you start going further out the expiration cycle. So in this case, the May contracts have a vega value of 34. So if I was trading both of these contracts, I would see a greater change in the option contract's value just purely on an implied volatility shift for the May contracts that are 43 days from expiration than I would for the April contracts, which are 15 days from expiration. If I go out even further than that, I just go to the December contracts for this year, which are 260 days out, then the 250 call options have a vega value of 83. So now you can see that it just continues to increase as we go further and further out in time. And so the longer you are from expiration, then the greater the impact implied volatility will have on your option contract's price. Now, that all being said, keep in mind that the longer you are from expiration, the slower the option contract decays because of theta, right? So we're not going to get into theta today, but it's worth pointing out and worth mentioning that when you go further out in time, the decay from theta is going to be smaller and smaller until you get much closer to where the stock is trading now. Now, conceptually, I think a good way to think about this, and this is the way that I think about it. I don't know if I was actually taught this way or just like kind of made it up in my mind, but the way that I think about this is like flying an airplane from New York to LA. So if you take off in New York and your destination is LA, which is all the way across the country, if you have that airplane pointed right at Los Angeles and 10 minutes into the flight, you make a 1% change in trajectory from New York to LA, well, that change happened so early with so much more distance to cover before you reached your destination that you could wind up all the way in Northern California, in Oregon, in Washington, down in Mexico, right? A 1% change could have a pretty dramatic impact on the final destination because you have so much ground to cover. And let's say that you're flying from New York to LA, and 30 minutes before you reach LA, so you've gone all the way, you've pointed the airplane right at LA, 30 minutes before you reach your destination, you make a 1% change in the trajectory of the airplane. Now, at that point, you've covered most of the distance. There's not that much that has to happen before you reach LA, right? So 1% change, you probably won't hit the runway, but you'll still probably be in the vicinity of the airport at that point. You'll be much closer than you would be if you made a 1% change 10 minutes after takeoff. So this to me is how I think about conceptually, and I literally, good, bad, or indifferent, every time I think about changes in volatility, I mentally think about this analogy and this concept that when we change volatility, and it's a further out option contract, it has a much greater impact on the value or the final destination of the contract. When we change volatility and we're much closer to where the stock is, or much closer to expiration, it's going to have a much smaller impact on the option contract's price. Not that it has no impact, it just has a much smaller impact on the option contract's price. Okay, so we covered Vega as it relates to time. Now the other thing that we have to cover is Vega as it relates to the strike price of your option contract. Now you might be asking yourself, well, Kirk, well, why is the strike price important? Because we just covered all the importance around volatility and time until expiration, which is obviously important, but what does my strike price have to do with it? If I'm trading an option contract 15 days or 43 days from expiration, shouldn't it impact my contract wherever it is in the option chain, wherever the strike price is? And the answer is simply no. And this is because options that are closest to the stock price, so option contracts that are at the money or near at the money, in our example with SPY, if SPY is trading around 250, this would be somewhere around the 250, 255, 245 type strike call options that are call and put options that are at the money or near at the money, they are always going to have the highest Vega values when compared to options of the same expiration that are further from where the stock price is trading. So option contracts that are out of the money from where the stock is trading. And this is, again, because these option contracts that are at the money are really kind of doing this dance around the stock price of intrinsic value, no intrinsic value, intrinsic value, no intrinsic value. A small change in where the stock goes and a small change up or down in the stock price could have a dramatic impact in the option contract's final value. So think about a stock that's trading at 250 right now. The 250 call option at expiration is really dancing between a lot of value and no value. If you have a long 250 call option and the stock closes at 251, well, you have a dollar worth of intrinsic value at expiration just from a $1 change between now and expiration. But if the stock falls just a dollar and closes at 250, 249, your 250 call option is worthless. So the option price is going to change pretty dramatically right around these at-the-money strikes. And as a result, any change in volatility could have a really dramatic impact on the option price. And so that's why we see these Vega values are highest when you're looking at-the-money and near-at-the-money contracts compared to the same expiration and then out-of-the-money contracts that are not close to where the stock is trading. So getting back to our SPY example, which is trading right around 250 right now, which is easy and makes the math and everything easier for this podcast anyway. But the 250 call options for April expiration, which are 15 days to go from today, again, have a Vega value of 21. If I go out to the 10 delta call options for the April expiration, those are the 275 options, those have a Vega value of just 11. Now, right here, just in this single option expiration, the April expiration, we can see that Vega is going to more or have a greater impact on option contracts that are a strike price around 250 than it's going to have on option contracts that are at 275. And if you think about it logically, 275 is 25 points away from where the S&P is right now. So let's say that implied volatility increased 1%, or the expectation that volatility is going to go up increases 1%. Your call option at 275 is still pretty far out. A 1% change in where SPY goes over the course of 15 days, again, broken down annualized, but a 1% annualized change broken down over 15 days doesn't really change potentially the value of this 275 call option. There's really not that much value in it anyway because it's running out of time and it's still super, super far away from the current stock price. And so that's why just changes in volatility are going to impact all of these different contracts a little bit different based on time and based on location of the strike price relative to the underlying stock price. Now, does this happen again in further out expirations? So let's go out to the May contracts. Remember, the May 250 call options had a Vega value of 34. If we go out to the 10 delta call options in May, which are about the 280 strike, a little bit further out now that we're in May, 43 days to go until expiration, the Vega value of the 280 call strikes is 24. Now, again, this is much less than the at-the-money strikes. Now, you might notice that the differential is not as great for these May contracts, and that's because there's still 43 days to go until expiration. So the change in implied volatility or the vega value is not going to have this dramatic impact until you get much closer to expiration. And then the out-of-the-money contracts and the differential between those and the at-the-money contracts for vega is much more pronounced because now you're just running out of time. So here the tailing off effect is much flatter. So the curve is much flatter, if you will, for the vega values. But again, what this highlights is this idea that as you move out from the at-the-money strikes, you're generally going to see a lower impact in volatility's price changes for your contract. All right, so this makes sense, right? And if you think about it logically, and just even pause here if you need to, and really think about what we just went over, maybe rewind it and listen to it again, it does make sense why vega values or the changes in an option contract will be different at different expirations and at different strike prices. Now we're going to continue to dig even deeper here. And this is going to now start to make all of this discussion, and hopefully your head's not spinning. Hopefully you've done a good job of kind of explaining these concepts. But if your head wasn't spinning yet, it might start to kind of feel a little bit off here, because as we dig deeper into this next topic area, this is where we continue to go into different dimensions for option pricing. And if you remember, I said in the very beginning of this podcast episode that stock trading is easy. It is super one-dimensional, but option pricing and option contracts are multidimensional. And so you have to understand not only just these relationships that we just went through between vega and time till expiration and vega and strike price, but now as we start to talk about different strategies themselves, now we're going to have to start to think about the offsetting impact of trading different types of strategies where we're long one contract and short another contract. And so now it takes this whole conversation and it takes it to a completely different level where now the dimensions continue to add on top of one another. Now, this to me is really fun stuff. Like, I enjoy this. I think that this is super interesting and I like really get a high out of doing this and kind of talking about this. But you'll have to take your time here and kind of think about this with your own individual positions as you move forward. And it is something you should consider all the time and should be in the back of your mind as you start to analyze what impact different positions might have with volatility changes. So as we start to talk about strategies, I want to talk about first the differentials between undefined risk strategies and defined risk strategies, because I think this makes it a lot easier to classify these two. So when you have an undefined risk strategy, and to me as an option seller, this would be short put options, short call options, short strangles, short straddles, anything that's undefined risk, you're going to have a pretty dramatic change in the options price when volatility changes. And that's purely because you have contracts that are one-sided, meaning you're just selling option contracts, whether it's call options or put options, really doesn't matter, because the option contract is just a pure sell with nothing else attached. When volatility changes, that's going to have a pretty dramatic impact on the option price. The same thing can be said for any defined risk long option contracts, where you're buying a call, buying a put, buying a strangle, buying a straddle. When you get into a situation where volatility changes, you're in a one-sided trade where you're just an option buyer. You haven't used a spread to create a risk-defined position or a spread-type position. So when changes in implied volatility happen, it's going to have a dramatic impact on your option contract. This is something you just have to be aware of. And it makes it really hard, because if you're trading something like a straddle or a strangle, when you get an implied volatility change, it's going to have a really dramatic impact on your option price, because now you have two contracts, one on either side, whether you're short selling or whether you're buying straddles and strangles, it's going to have a pretty big impact on your option price. Now, again, that doesn't mean that you don't do it. It just means you have to be aware of it. You just have to understand how volatility and it going up or down is going to impact your option price. This is exactly why I have pounded on the table and preached for so long, even heading into the 2020 collapse, that we were in a low implied volatility environment. And when you're in a low implied volatility environment, as an option seller, you know one of the quickest ways that you can lose money is for volatility to go from a low state to a high state. And so as a result, you have to pare back your allocations. You have to just physically stop trading as much of your capital account. On the flip side, now that we're in a high volatility environment, this means that anybody who's doing some option buying should be prepared potentially, or should have factored it into their analysis, that if implied volatility goes down and goes down rather quickly from these high levels, that means that their premium in these contracts are going to dry up very quickly, even if there's no change in the underlying securities price. And that's really important to understand, again, just how that impacts the option contract. So with undefined risk strategies, or strategies where you're a one-sided trader, pure selling, pure buying, those strategies are going to have the biggest changes in option price when volatility changes. Now, let's switch gears here and talk about defined risk strategies. Defined risk strategies are things like credit spreads, debit spreads, iron condors, iron butterflies, anything where you are not only buying, but you're selling. And it doesn't matter what side or what strategy, anything that you're defining risk by the purchase or sale of a spread. When you trade spreads, now you have to think about the offsetting impact of volatility. So let's say we traded a credit spread where we sold a put option and bought a put option at a lower strike. When we see implied volatility go down, that's going to help the put option that we sold, but it's going to have a negative impact on the put option that we bought. And so now when you're trading spreads, not only do you have to think about how much time we have until expiration and where my strike prices are from the stock price, but you also have to think about, to some degree, what type of spread am I trading and how tight or how wide is my spread? In the case of, let's say, SPY, if we were to trade a put option spread in the May expiration, where SPY is trading at 250, and we sell the 240 put option and we buy the 239 put option, we create a $1 wide credit spread. Well, the vega value for the 240 and the 239 put options are both the same at 33. That means if volatility changes, because our spread is so narrow, that changes in volatility will be almost completely offset for that particular spread. So this is, again, why we see a lot of people when they're trading spreads and they've decided to trade a spread that's more narrow or wider, have issues or have concerns with how an option price is impacted with changes in volatility. So a lot of people will email in and they'll say, Kirk, you know, I was trading this credit spread and volatility went down just like I thought, but my credit spread didn't change in value, right? And it's because maybe the spread was so narrow that the benefit you had on one contract was completely offset by the negative impact on the other contract. In this case, if we did the 239, 240, or 249, 239, whatever I said, those are totally offsetting. If volatility changes, whether it goes up or down, it really shouldn't have an impact at all pretty much on this contract because it's so narrow. Now, let's say we sold the 240 put option and we bought, just for the sake of argument, the 220 put option. Well, now we've widened our defined risk spread from just a dollar wide to $20 wide. Now the changes in vega values for an option contract that's closer versus further out is more pronounced. So the 220 put option has a vega value of 27. The 240 put option has a vega value of 33. Okay, so now if we get a change in volatility, the offsetting impact is probably going to be something that does change the spread's price, irrespective of the stock actually moving. Now, if a decline in volatility happens, that should positively net impact our position. If we get a rise in implied volatility, it will negatively net impact our position. And again, it's this differential, this additional thinking of not only just where are my strikes, what expiration, but how wide are these strikes relative to each other so that the offsetting impact is it great? Is it small? Is it big? What is it? So as you start to think about defined risk strategies, how far you are from expiration or near you are to expiration, how tight your spreads are or how wide they are will have a dramatic impact on, obviously, the changes in option prices as a result of volatility. To me, and I'm just speaking of myself and how I kind of have traded recently over the past couple of years, we've been trading a lot more iron butterflies. And if you think about an iron butterfly type trade where you're selling the at the money straddle, so the strikes that are at the money, in our case of this example with SPY, we would maybe sell the 250 calls and the 250 puts, which are right at the money. And we would go out really, really far on the wings and buy cheap protection. So our spreads for an iron butterfly are going to be really wide, right? $20, $30, $40 wide in some of these cases for a big ticker like SPY. So when we see implied volatility drop, we're going to have a much bigger benefit to our position because we're selling at the money and we're buying further out wings. The drop in implied volatility is going to benefit us more than if we had sold a really wide iron condor. So if we sold a really wide iron condor and we made the wings $20 from where the stock was trading and we only did a $5 wide spread on either side, when implied volatility drops, we're not going to get that big of an impact to our option price. Our option price might go down for sure, but it's not going to be as great of an impact as it is for an iron butterfly position. Now, I'm not here to tell you which one is better or worse. I'm just here to help you understand that when you set up different option strategies, and in this example, an iron butterfly versus a wide iron condor, you're going to have a different type of risk profile and payout structure. And so if you choose to do something like an iron condor, which is wider in the middle, right? You don't have to worry about one contract always being in the money and all the assignment risk and management risk. Okay, you choose to do the wider iron condor. At the same time that you do a wider position, that means that when implied volatility collapses, you may not get as quick of a payout as I might get with an iron butterfly position. Now, at the same time, on the flip side, if implied volatility goes up, then I'm going to feel more pain short term than you will probably feel as an iron condor trader. There's no right or wrong here to say one is better than the other. It's just a different way that the payout structure is handled, right? Like, I think about this in income, and I use this for coaching and training a lot. Some people like to be paid a monthly salary because it's predictable and it's what they're used to, right? I just want to be paid a monthly salary. Other people choose to get into professions where they get paid a commission. And sometimes their pay is high and sometimes their pay is low. But because they're in a position where they are taking on a little bit more risk themselves and getting into a commission job, they have the opportunity to make more money. I think about this as iron butterflies and iron condors. Iron condors probably are like a salaried position. You know exactly what's going to happen. It's probably going to be a lot less volatile. You're not going to have as big of a drawdown potentially, right? The win rates are a little bit higher, but you just don't make as much money as if you were to potentially trade an iron butterfly where there's going to be more volatility. You're going to have different win rates, different payout structures, but you have the propensity to not hold positions as long as maybe say an iron condor. So again, it's just a difference in how the payout and risk is structured. Not saying one's bad or worse than the other. It's just a difference in opinion. But it's understanding those differentials for implied volatility and option pricing that really gets you to the next level in your trading. Because to me, understanding volatility and its impact on the market is one thing. But if you can really understand volatility and its impact on different option contracts and different strategies, that elevates you to a completely different level of trader. And I think, and I would argue, that that makes you more effective, allows you to be more unemotional and make better decisions with your trading. So hopefully you guys have really enjoyed this discussion today around implied volatility and its impact on option pricing. If you did, let us know, leave us a review and a rating. Of course, share the show with friends and family. And of course, head on over to the show notes page at optionalpha.com/show175 to get a copy of the show notes and get all the additional resources and videos that we'll link up there for you guys.
And now our favorite part of the show, Trader Q&A, where we ask a question from one of our current members about options trading. Got a question you'd like to ask Kirk to answer live on the air? Just head on over to optionalpha.com/ask and hit the record button to leave a message. That's optionalpha.com/ask. And now, here's today's question.
Hey, Kurt. Ray here. I've been trading about 30 years now, but still learning. My question is focused on inverse ETFs like the SH from ProShares or TZA from Direction. I think I understand the basic concept, but what confuses me is the notion of puts and calls in an inverse fund. If I buy a call in an inverse fund, does the call premium rise when the underlying goes down? And conversely, does the put fall? Why would I simply not buy a put in a traditional index fund if I am trying to hedge my account versus getting involved in an inverse fund? I'm sure I'm missing something here, but would love to hear your input on that. Thanks.
All right. Hey, Ray, thank you so much for submitting the question. And I think it's a good question. I've never actually had a lot of people talk about this with regard to inverse ETFs and double leveraged, triple leveraged ETFs as well. So I'll throw those all in the mix here. But you still have to think about the option contract very much the same way for an inverse product or even a leveraged product. So when you look at an inverse fund or leveraged ETF fund, that's just related to the actual underlying shares or the underlying security. That has nothing to do necessarily with inversing the role or the function of the option contracts. So it's really that simple, is that when you're looking at any particular position, option contracts and their impact and their pricing and call options being call options, put options being put options, don't change or they don't inverse when you're trading a different product. The inverse options or the inverse ETFs and the leveraged ETFs just change faster or move in inverse based on how they're structured for the individual security itself. So hopefully this helps out. As always, if you have a question and you want to get it answered here on the podcast like Ray did, simply head on over to optionalpha.com/ask and click the big red button in the middle of the screen and leave me a private voicemail. Again, it goes right to me. There's no software to download or install. It's very, very easy. So let's get into the closing bell segment today, where we're going to talk about a new trade that we're making right now in XBI.
Now, the closing bell. Find out which stocks we're looking at right now, trades we're making, and hear our game plan moving forward.
All right, so new trade we're making today in XBI. This is a call credit spread. So it's a bearish call spread that we're trading here in XBI. And the reason that we're doing this, and again, just to kind of set up the baseline for why we're getting into this position, is because even though the markets have rallied just a little bit at the time of this expiration, we are starting to see the markets come back around and see some more volatility and start to head lower. And so as a result, we want to take positions on both sides of the market, and we need a little bit more bearish exposure in our portfolio. So if the markets were going to continue to rally, we'd be okay just to let the markets rally a little bit more and kind of fall into the middle of our payoff diagram. But right now, with the market starting to head lower towards the end of the day here, we're going to take a bearish position and give ourselves a little bit more bearish exposure in our portfolio, but at the same time, do it with a credit spread that gives us a high probability of success in case this thing turns around. So in the case of XBI, we're selling the 83-84 call credit spread for May expiration. This is about 44 days to go until expiration for us. And the 83-84, we're selling for a net credit of $1.30, which basically gets our break-even price to about $84.30. Now, where the stock is ending up today and is going to seem like it's going to close somewhere around 73 and change means that the stock basically has to make a move of about $11 between now and expiration for us to lose money on this position. So it's a high implied volatility trade because implied volatility is super high in XBI right now. It's a high probability setup and it gives us bearish exposure. What I personally like about doing trades like this and market environments that are going down and seeing high implied volatility is that if this trade were to turn around, or if the stock were to turn around, and let's say XBI starts to rally higher, if that happens, we would probably see, not all the time, but we'd probably see implied volatility drop. And because we're doing a $5 wide spread that's out of the money, we are going to see a decline in the value of this contract with an implied volatility drop. And let's say that XBI rallies all the way back up to 83.84. Well, then we can quickly come in and we can convert this into an iron butterfly by selling the 83 put option and buying the 78 put option. So basically just take it and convert it into a risk-defined neutral position. So there's a lot of outs for this position. There's a lot of ways in which it can make money and a lot of ways in which we can hedge or reduce our risk if we're wrong in our opinion of XBI going down, which I don't know if XBI is going to go down. Actually, I don't have the opinion that yes, it will go down. I'm not making this bet saying yes, XBI is going to go down. I'm placing this trade because that's what my portfolio needs. It needs exposure into different core tickers that give us bearish exposure in case they go down. So it still allows us to facilitate that side of what we need right now, but at the same time gives us a lot of flexibility so that if the stock rallies or stays the same or goes all the way up to our strike price and we need to start converting it and reducing risk, we have the ability to do that. So that's why I like this position. Again, for XBI in May, we are selling the 83.88 credit call spread, bearish call spread, if you want to call it that, for $1.30 credit.
Thanks for listening to the Option Alpha podcast. If you liked what you heard, please drop by iTunes and leave a rating or comment. Plus, you can get everything. Free email updates for future shows, transcripts, video tutorials, case studies, and more. Just visit our website at optionalpha.com.
All right, so that's a wrap for this week's podcast episode here at Option Alpha. But before you go, let's keep the conversation going. As always, please connect with me on your favorite social media platform and let me know what questions, ideas, thoughts came to mind after listening to today's show on implied volatility. Also, I want to let you know what we've got coming up for the next podcast. So next week, we have a podcast coming out on protective put strategies and some of the research that we found out there on the effectiveness of a protective put option strategy. This is going to be very timely because we just went through, obviously, a major market meltdown. And so what we wanted to see is, okay, if somebody was going to try to protect their position and their portfolio moving forward, is a protective put strategy the best way to do it? And if it is, how do we set up those protective put strategies to get the best use out of the insurance? So don't forget to catch that next week on the podcast. Also, if you're part of our elite membership program, we do also have an office hours scheduled for next Wednesday, the 15th at 9 p.m. Eastern. This is your opportunity to jump on with me and just ask as many questions as possible. These are really fun sessions that we do a couple times a month where people submit questions. We have a list of questions that we go over, all types of questions and trading insights and thought processes. And then people obviously jump on and we just ask a bunch of questions back and forth. So if you're a part of our elite membership, again, that office hours is coming up next Wednesday, the 15th of April at 9 p.m. Eastern. All right, as always, I hope you guys truly enjoyed today's show and got at least one thing out of it that you can apply right now to help you consistently play smarter, more profitable trades. Until next time, happy trading.